I think one of the biggest mistakes we make in sales is that we're always looking for the big, sexy answer. That one thing, man, that if we just get the light bulb to go off, everything is going to fast forward for us. And I can't speak for you, but I'm in sales now 34 years. In fact, it'll be 34 years this summer. I got into sales right out of high school, working my way through college. And the one thing I found is that there's no damn big answer. Like, I haven't found it yet. But what I have found is that sometimes I'm so busy focusing on finding that answer that I miss all the smaller answers that actually are going to impact my sales at a much greater level. And one of the things that I want to point out to you this week anyway is that there are small things that at least appear small on the surface that are actually huge when it comes to prospecting. So today I thought we'd talk about five ways to dramatically improve your prospecting chops. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. All right, so you guys know how I like to begin my podcast. I like to start with some kind of a freebie. And this freebie, though, is going to come with a bit of a reality check. I'm going to ask you a few questions. I don't want you to answer them out loud because it's going to look a little crazy to your coworkers. You, like, talking to yourself. That's how it's going to look. Like, I mean, seriously, you're going to get a random drug test today if you pull that. But I want you to be honest with yourself and fight your urge to kind of say maybe it's better than it is, you know, kind of sugarcoat it. But here's the question. You ready? How's your year going? And I mean, like, how's your year really going? Don't give me the answer that you'd give someone to kind of sugarcoat it and cover things up, maybe because you're a little embarrassed. This is kind of like me and you right now, except this is really like a little soul searching that you're doing. Nobody's going to know. It's kind of like for your information only. How's the year going? Are you getting the results that you hope that you would be getting this year? Because I looked at the calendar before, and I had to do a double take because I'm like, I can't believe it. Like, 4 months are already down. I'm looking at the fact that we're going into May, and I know that once we hit May, we're going to blink, and the year's going to be halfway over in June. Then what's going to happen is we're going to blink again, provided that we're only going to blink like twice this year, right? But we're going to blink again. And it's going to be, all of a sudden, it's going to be year end. So we know that time flies. But what happens many times is that we start asking the difficult questions of ourselves a little bit too late. So how's your year going? Are you getting the results that you hoped you'd have? And now it's going to get a little more difficult for you. Are you asking for help? Because I know that's a really difficult thing for salespeople with our egos. I know for years I didn't ask for help. I didn't hire my first coach until I was at it for years and years and years. I'd already made some epic mistakes, already put my family through a lot of hardship because I was an idiot. Like, you know, you weren't going to teach me anything. I was arrogant and I knew it all. And I was that guy that I always make fun of today. So yeah, that's sales 101 and that's basic. And I know, and everybody knows that, but I wasn't doing any of it. I thought that because like I did that stuff earlier in my career, I was somehow excused from the here and now. But are you asking other people for help? Are you asking your boss for help if you aren't getting the results that you want? How about people that you know that are getting the results that you want? And here's the one where I'm really going to go out on a limb. I mean, dare I say this to you, but have you actually thought about getting a sales coach? And again, if you're like me in the way I was, you really was just very cautious about hiring a sales coach. Wasn't even the money. It was kind of the bullshit factor, to be quite honest with you, is that I noticed a lot of people who called themselves a coach that to me, now this is just like, this is me being Paul and the, you know, the asshole that I am. But like, I was looking at these people calling themselves a sales coach, and I was looking at the lack of experience they had and the fact that they looked to me more like a displaced salesperson. You know, kind of like when you tell people, yeah, I was consulting, but you were unemployed. That's why, like, I avoided it. But if you're in a situation right now where you think that maybe you finally reached the point that you're going to, like, you know, like, reach out to people and ask for help and take on a sales coach, then I have a free resource for you that's going to help you. I put together a guide, and it's called How to Hire a Sales Coach. I mean, like, how creative could I have gotten on that title, right? How to Hire a Sales Coach. And I look, and I show you all the things that you should be looking for, the questions that you should be asking potential sales coaches, because I'm here to tell you something. All sales coaches, they're not created equally. And when you look at how many of us there are out there, seriously, there's no shortage of people saying, I'm a sales coach. And for you to find the right one, it's like finding a soulmate. You really have to do your due diligence. So if you'd like my free guide, where it's going to take you through the questions to ask and the things you should be considering. I mean, things about like I don't know, like, are you still selling now? Or did, like, you stop years ago and you're just, like, kind of doing, you know, like the coaching training type of gig. So it's really important that you know the things to ask. So if you'd like to download your free copy, it's going to save you a lot of time. I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. Now, coaching as opposed to, like, coking, okay? Because coking, you might, I don't know, you might get, like, a different type of person if you're looking for coking, and you're not going to get them on my website. But seriously, that is a long time for me to spend, like, beating around the bush. So I say we get down to business. Today we're going to be talking about five ways to improve your sales chops. Now, I decided to go about this a very different way. Now, I don't know about you, but I have these moments in my life, and they're like light bulb moments where light bulb goes off and I'm like, oh my gosh, man, like that, like, finally, like, I get it. I understand, like, the lesson here. Holy shit, like, why was I doing it that way? And I've had lots of those moments throughout my life. And, you know, admittedly, they're not huge things on the surface. And it's like what I alluded to at the beginning of the podcast was how we're always looking for this big, sexy answer. Like this one thing, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. It's like the heaven and earth are going to change because of this. What I find, it's more of a revelation that I wasn't doing it. Or even, you know that old saying, like, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. You see, I look at that saying differently than most people. I think most people look at it in the sense of when the student is ready, a teacher physically appears, like a mentor or a person you're looking at that's getting a result that perhaps could teach you. Or, you know, maybe today you're listening to this and you heard me talk about that free guide for sales coaching. You're like, oh my gosh, I've been listening to Paul for years. Like, why don't I check into his coaching program or whatever the hell it is, right? But I look at it differently than that. I look at it like the teacher appearing is more, the teacher is the lesson. In many cases, it's a lesson that you've tripped over your entire life, your entire working life, your entire sales career. And for whatever reason, though, today you've realized that you've been tripping over it. You've realized what that lesson is, and you're ready to own it. I mean, I've had those moments, and they're incredible moments. And one of these moments was, it was almost 20 years ago. And I was talking with one of my peers with this company I work for. Now, just a tiny bit of background that I think is important to know. There was a group of us in this one company that I worked for that went up in the ranks together. We all started right about the same time. And I'll never forget, the guy that hired all of us said, listen, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to blow smoke and tell you, you know, our company is the greatest company and, you know, you've got a bright future and everything else, and they're not going to deliver. And he said, I want to be proof positive to you guys that you do the right thing in this company, you go up in the ranks. And he said, you know, let me explain my path here. And he talked about how, you know, he got great results and he made sales manager at his location out in Chicago. Then he did really, really well. In fact, he was number one in the company, I think, once or twice, or he's definitely a top 10 rep, if I recall. And, you know, he had like the Rolex to prove it and everything else, showed us the rankings and everything. And they gave him his own location to run. He ran the New York office back then, which was Garden City, New York. And he was also being fast-tracked to be the youngest vice president in the history of the company. I think at the time he was about 28 years old, and he knew he was within about a year or two out from that. And he said, you do the right thing here, we're all going to go up together. And we did. He became vice president. I went on from sales rep to running the New Jersey office for the company. You know, a friend of mine who's also started at the same time, he skipped the corporate route and actually bought a master franchise from his commission checks. A master franchise was $250,000 back then. And he was able to come up with that kind of money at maybe 30 or 31 years old. So, you know, all of us really rose in the ranks together. So one day, you know, we kept in touch because we all felt that there were things we could learn from each other, which I think is very important in sales. And we forget about that because of the ego. It's like somehow it's taboo to ask a coworker, hey, how are you? You know, I notice like, you know, like every month you're climbing in the rankings. What are you doing? Or like having them break down something for you, which I think is important. You know, you had mentioned that, you know, in the sales meeting that the ABC company was really, really difficult with you as far as the negotiation. Hey, can I buy you a beer or can I buy you lunch? And you could take me through that negotiation so I could learn from you. You obviously did something right. I've seen you do this before. I want to learn from you. So we all kept doing that, which I think was an important thing that many of you might not be doing. And one day I'm sitting with you know, one of my peers. And he said to me, he goes, you know, Paul, he goes, I really had a revelation. And he said that, you know, when I was really thinking about how in sales, so much of what we do today, no matter how long we've been in sales, you could be in sales 6 months or you could be in sales 6 years. Or in our cases, I mean, we were already in sales at that point. Heck, I was in sales about 16 years at that point. He said that we always seem to default back to the very first way that we learn something. And then he went off the subject for a minute, which actually was quite brilliant. It's actually a very good technique to use in sales, believe it or not. And to prove the point, he used an analogy, which analogies are very powerful in sales to get people to understand a concept, or especially something's technical or something that might take, you know, some real visualization to own. And what he said was, he said, we always default back to the first way we learn something. And he said, Paul, this is probably why you have so many adults saying bye-bye instead of goodbye. That was the first way we learned to say goodbye. I mean, think about it. I mean, yeah, I catch myself sometimes saying that. It's like, wow, like what the hell? Am I like 2 years old again? You got to get home. Mama has to change the diaper. You know, still wet myself at 2 freaking years old. Like, what the hell's up with that? There's a picture for you. But anyway, seriously. So we default back. Now, defaulting back to things in sales, the first way we learned it, can be a bad thing if you don't challenge it. You see, a few things could happen, and I want to be very careful how I say this to you, because I could be just about at the point where I'm about to insult you, or perhaps the person that you look up to that taught you what you're doing. I certainly don't mean it that way, but it's possible that you were taught wrong. Seriously, there are a lot of interpretations when it comes to sales and how we should go about doing things. So you might have been taught wrong. It's not like they had a list of things to do. Screw over the career path of Jane and teach her wrong. No, it's like people aren't aware that they're doing it the wrong way. The same way, and forgive me, it's like, you know, sometimes people who are assholes don't realize that they're assholes, right? Bad comparison, but it's really true. People don't run around saying, I know that. I am conscious of the fact that I'm being an asshole. It's just that they became that at some point. And it's the same thing with selling. Sometimes we were taught the wrong way. The other thing in sales is that sometimes we were taught the right way, but we didn't. It was the right way then, and we didn't evolve. And we didn't like try different things, and we didn't update our style and things like that. So that's what I want you to look at today. Now, we have five things that we're going to talk about. And some of them we can whip right through, and there's at least one or two that I want to beat up the point with you. So how can we develop our phone chops? And at the same time, it's kind of like a twofer. At the same time, look at things that we're doing that aren't necessarily serving us anymore. So the very first thing that you can do, and you've heard me talk about this before. Again, I'm not going for a big aha with you today. I'm trying to go for things that you've probably heard a million times from a million different sales trainers that have told you this. And I'm hoping today that for some reason you're ready, like that teacher appeared, and you're ready to accept the lesson. So the very first thing is, embrace the concept of game tape. Embrace the concept of game tape. And what I mean by that, if you think about that, right? The best coaches, what do? They review the game tape, not only on their own, but they do it as a team. They're looking for those points in the game where they were on fire. They freeze frame it. They talk about it. Why? So that they can do it again. So that it's not just like, oh, wow, just by like the grace of God, we stumbled upon something smart. No, it's so that we can identify things so that we do it again. They're also looking at points of that tape where they lost control of the ball, lost control of the game. They did something that wasn't in their best interest. Like, why did you cut to the right there? I mean, yeah, I wasn't thinking. Okay, note to self, don't do that again. You know, and maybe what they're going to do now because of that game tape is they're going to run their drills a little bit differently. But the point is, when you embrace the concept of game tape, and if you're not driving in the car, I want you to write this down right now, is that it keeps you in a place that you need to be as a sales professional. And that's the place where you're a humble student of sales, not some arrogant asshole that thinks that they have it all figured out. I mean, don't you know people like that? I mean, seriously. And I will tell you, not only do I know people like that, but I was absolutely that guy earlier in my career. I had a lot of success come at me at a very young age, early in my career. And I just thought that meant I didn't have to learn anymore. I didn't have to listen to feedback from people. I was God's gift. And I crashed and burned, by the way, as a result of it. But I won't bore you with that story again. But we're talking about you right now. And we're talking about ways that you can remain a humble student of sales. Now, what you want to do with that game tape is you want to do a few things. You want to get out. I think this is a great use for a journal. I talk about using journals all the time. And a lot of people will send me emails and say, okay, but how do you use a journal? Now, I don't use a journal like kind of like a Dear Diary thing that a lot of people do. I'm not here to knock you if that's the way you want to use it. I use mine in many cases much like the scrap paper your math teacher insisted that you used so that she could figure out what the hell you were thinking when you answered that algebra question a certain way or whatever. I know that's like, you know, like that's what happened in my math class because I was horrible at math. But, you know, you'd hand in the scrap paper so at least they knew like what you were thinking and how you got there. I use the journal much in the same way when I'm having thinking time. I want a place to capture my thoughts because sometimes the thoughts that we think are garbage or that we reject or whatever are actually quite brilliant. And you don't realize it until you step away and you step back again. But getting back to prospecting and developing your phone chops, this is a great place to capture ideas and crystallize your thoughts. So what you want to do is you want to tape your end of your conversations. Why your end of the conversation, not the whole conversation? It's because the laws that tell us whether or not we can tape a conversation without going to jail, they vary from state to state. I would imagine they vary from country to country. This is an international podcast. So, you know, that's really up to you to decide and to look into whether or not it's legal. But one thing is for sure, that you can always tape your end of the conversation, right? You're not breaking any laws there. You tape your end of the conversation. And what I want you to do is get out your journal, and I want you to do a few things. You're going to tape a few conversations, like take a call cluster, if you will. Like maybe say, you know what, I'm going to tape like the next 5 calls that I make or 10 calls or whatever, or the next 25 minutes of calling or whatever the heck it is. And you record your end. Now you get out the handy dandy journal, and you listen to it. And again, it's game tape time. Do this when it's not game time, because imagine if you turn on the TV, you're ready to watch your favorite sports team, and you look and everybody's sitting around watching videos of their last game. See, you don't do that during game time. Do that during your own time, during lunch, before, after hours or whatever. But when you do it, there's a few things. I want you to look at, what are you saying? I want you to really look at, what are you saying? And I want you to think about, what are you leading with at the beginning of that conversation? Because what you lead with at the beginning of that conversation is going to really outline the trajectory of that call. Would you agree with that premise? That what we say at the very beginning can dramatically impact the trajectory of that call. Now, the problem with most people when they cold call, the way they were taught, the way I was taught, I'm right in there with you, was that we kind of start with something about us. In other words, hi, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. We're a full-service training company and blah, 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 blah. Now, aside from the fact that I just riddled that with marketing speak, which is another thing you should be paying attention to, but I mean, I've really led with something that, first of all, is very typical, right? That's like kind of like a Me Too approach. Every sales rep and their mother, I've heard people's mothers do this, by the way. I'm not just saying that because it makes me sound cool saying it. I've seen people's mothers do this, 80-year-old women saying this shit, and it's just painful to listen to. That old lady crackling voice and shit. It's just, it's horrible. Horrible. Drives me to drink. But anyway, you know, I've seen so many people lead that way, leading with something about you. If we are interrupting somebody, which is what we're doing, we're interrupting somebody, and we're interrupting them to tell them something about us with the hopes that we're going to be interesting enough and compelling enough for them to listen more and for them to set an appointment and for them to ultimately buy our widget, to me, that is like, that approach is broken. That's not a good way to approach it. Instead, I recommend that you start with something about them. And what are you going to lead with, like, that has to do with them? Well, this is where your research comes in. And hopefully you're going to find something that you can leverage. And we call these things, by the way, triggers. Something that's going on in your potential client's world that would dramatically increase the probability of them needing your product or service. And like, for example, let's just say, and I use this example all the time, you work for an auto mechanic and you've got the tow truck, right? Now, you could go and cold call everybody, you know, on the planet. And with the law of like sales being a numbers game and everything else, you'd hit somebody sooner or later that, oh, wow, like, what, do you have the place bugged? Heck yeah, man, I need some repair or whatever. Or imagine if you knew at any given time where people were going to be broken down on, like, you know, the highway with the hood up and smoke pouring out of the engine. Imagine if you knew that and you were able to find those people and just zero in on them. Who do you think is going to have a higher probability of buying that service? The person with the hood up and smoke, like, coming out of the car and that pissed off look on their face, like, holy shit, I'm stranded on the road and I'm running late now to work and, you know, there goes my day? Or some random person that you're calling? So the first thing is to know what the triggers are in your industry. Know how to find them. And once you find them, when you approach somebody, the best way for you to approach somebody is by leveraging a trigger. Now, when you have a trigger, the way that you're going to open that call, that's going to be very different. Instead of starting with, my name is, you know, hi, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training System, and I'm going to tell you all this shit about me that you don't care about. The better way to do it is to start off with this phrase. Write this phrase down. Again, if you're driving, I don't want you writing anything down. But, like, pull over and write it down. The phrase is, I noticed that. So I get you on the phone. It might be, hey, Mary, it's Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems. I noticed that you have this new product that's going to be coming out in a few months. Your, I think it's your X1000 series. You see, that's a whole different way to start a call. Because I'm starting that call with something that I know they're talking about in their organization because it's a trigger. Triggers are things also that they end up by talking about quite a bit internally. Think about things that your company has experienced, whether it be, it could be a new product, it could be a new corporate initiative, it could be a relocation, it could be an expansion. These things are talked about internally. So right away, you're leading with something, especially at the C-level, that's going to capture their attention. So that's the first thing that I want you to listen to on your game tape. What are you leading with? And really step back and listen to it, because you know what? I mean, you know, I don't want to say that you're not doing these things. Maybe you are doing this and you're not even aware of it. It's just intuitive to you. But it's very important that you understand what you're doing and you make it a repeatable, sustainable process. So that's one of the first thing you want to do. The other thing you want to do is you want to look at the packaging of what you're saying, right? So there's what you're saying and there's how you're saying it. And to me in sales, one of the things that like I like to say a lot is that, yes, I'm a student of sales, but like I major in packaging. I am a packaging major. And what I mean by that is for the better part of my career, I have really taken an interest in how other sales professionals package their pitch, if you will, or package their presentation, or package a certain part of their offering or whatever, how they're saying it. And the example I always give, when I had another light bulb moment, was when I owned a printing company, went into New York City, and we had this meeting that was going great, and just in like a split second, it spiraled downward quick, like it was about to crash and burn. And the thing that was the deal breaker for this lady, which I just wasn't ready for this. It's like, I don't know about you guys, but it's like, I can handle a lot of things, but the thing I can't handle, forgive me for saying this, is stupid. I can't handle stupid. I can handle, like, if you want to tell me, you know, I think you're ugly and I don't want to buy from you. I don't like fat, bald guys that curse. I get it, right? I can handle that. But I just can't handle something that makes no freaking sense to me. That, like, they might as well have just, like, blurted out some ridiculous thing. Like, who is that character, Brick or whatever it was in Anchorman, when he's like, you know, I love lamp. You might as well say that shit to me. I just can't handle stupid. And we're in this meeting, and the lady says, well, you know, the thing of it is that you're just way too far away. And my jaw, like, I could have tripped over it, man. It hit the floor. I was like, we're too far from you. I'm confused. She goes, yeah, you're all the way out in Long Island. All the way out in Long Island? Like, what the hell is this, the 13th century? And it's like, you know, we're looking at a map right now, Long Island. Dragons lie here. I mean, what the F are you talking about? It's an hour train ride. I mean, there's technology, man. It's the 21st freaking century. Like, what are you talking about, bitch? Like, talk to me. And I didn't say all that, though. See, and it's a good thing. I have a filter. And that day, my filter, man, it was spot on. And with that, I am there with this. I think he was like 60-something years old. And I was at the age where like everybody seemed like they were 60 years old. Like once you pass like 35 or 40, to me, you are like, you might as well be like 60 years old at that age, right? So I had this like older gent with me. And I'll never forget, like I'm there dumbfounded. And he knew. When I didn't have something to say, that I was just like completely like she got me, she zinged me. He puts his hand across me, which I love, almost like to say like, you know, I've got this one, son. Daddy's got this one, right? And he says, well, don't worry. We have a battery of messengers. And once again, my jaw dropped because I was like, that is like effing brilliant. A battery of messengers. So we get the deal, man, and it's a nice first order. Everything's cool, and we're like peas and carrots, as far as Gump would say. We leave, and I turn to Mel, this older 60-year-old, or whatever the hell he was. For all I know, I don't know, man. He might have been 32. I don't know. He might have had a hard life at 32, because the dude looked like he's like 60 freaking years old. So anyway, he says, I said to him, I said, I got to ask you, man. I own the joint. You know, I do we have a battery of messengers? He goes, hell no. But the messenger service that we use does. And it sounds a lot better saying we have a battery of messengers than saying, well, I could use a messenger service. That was the day that I realized that we have to become students of packaging. Everybody has different ways of saying the same thing. And if we just have our eyes and ears open, we can really come across some really cool things. I also maintain that on, you know, when we're prospecting, we get thrown off balance. Do you guys agree with that? No matter how long you've been at this, you could get thrown off balance, whatever. It doesn't even matter. Well, it does matter, but you can get thrown off balance for a variety of reasons. But think about when you're off of the phone and you lose your balance and you're thrown off balance. What happens with your hands? You're reaching for something, right? Like out of reflex, you're reaching for something. Well, let's go back to the phone. When you're thrown off balance on the phone or any conversation, you still reach for something. But the difference is, instead of reaching for something physically to grab onto, you're reaching for the right words to say. And in that moment, I maintain that you're either going to reach for something brilliant or something so god-awful that you want to make a note to self never to do it again. And you never quite give that gift to yourself unless you put on the humble student's cap, you listen to the game tape, and you listen for those moments. The other things that you want to do is you want to look at, you know, in terms of packaging, you want to look at within your message, right? Within the words that you're saying, are you using things like analogies? I've given you a few analogies throughout this podcast today, right, to get you to understand it. Are you using things like analogies? Are you using things to help eliminate doubt and skepticism and hesitation? Things like facts, referencing studies, and even like using a good story to bring something to life. Are you asking questions? Questions are great, by the way, because questions, first of all, the quality of your communication really can be traced back to the quality of the questions you're asking. Ask a better question, you get better answers. But the other thing about questions that are just so incredible in any setting is that it allows you to take control of the conversation without being controlling. So my question to you, or the question that I want you to ask yourself when you're reviewing the game tape, you know, am I asking questions, and, you know, am I asking good quality questions? So I think that's something that you want to think about as well. But, you know, you also have to look at moments of that call, just like the team that's watching the game tape, where you might have lost control of it. And you want to pinpoint that moment and figure out, what was I saying? What was I doing? How was I saying it? You know, and just really dissect it so that you don't do it again. But also, by the same token, there's a lot of people out there that will tell you, always got to look for the areas that you have to improve. And, you know, in essence, like the things that you're doing wrong so that you can make them better. See, that's an important part of improvement. But I also believe that you have to look at the things you're doing right, become conscious of them, so that your next call is going to be more intentional, that you're going to realize that, you know what, the way I'm opening those calls seems to be working really, really well. Within the first few seconds, we're engaged in a conversation instead of a sales pitch. Okay, note to self, keep doing that. So you have to look at the things you're doing right as well. So last but not least, you have to look at the overall conversation, and if it's something that you're creating that's more objection resistant, because many times when it comes to prospecting, we talk about how to handle objections. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today too. But really the best way to handle an objection is to avoid getting it in the first place. So that's where I would really invite you to do this game tape idea and become conscious of what you're saying that might be leading to the objections that you're getting, okay? So concept number one is the concept of game tape. Concept number two is very, very easy because it's utilizing the same principles of game tape. You can do exactly the same things that I told you to do, like what you're saying, how you're saying it, where you might be losing control, where you're hitting a home run so that you can do it again, all of those things. What you want to do now, as far as that game tape goes, is take it a step further. Every once in a while, instead of recording your calls, set up your phone and get like a little tripod. You could do this. I don't know if you know this or not, but you know, on Amazon, you could buy a tripod for your smartphone. I bought mine under $10 a few years ago. And you could do the same thing. Just like look it up, man. Try like whatever your phone is. Mine's an iPhone tripod. and they're inexpensive as anything. And what you want to do is videotape some of your calls. Now, you might be thinking, well, that's silly because we can't see the other person. Well, we're not concerned with the other person. We're concerned with how you look. Now, again, you might be thinking, again, Paul, kind of lost me, buddy. They're not going to see me. I could be sitting there in my underwear. They're not going to know. Well, what you have to understand is how you look is how you sound. So what you want to do is you want to see and you want to focus in on your visual message. Now, again, you might be thinking, Paul, man, like, I don't know if you're high this week or not, but like, you're not getting it. They don't see me. Who gives a shit, right? But you should give a shit because how you look is how you sound. So when you go back and you look at that videotape, right? The other portion where you're listening to yourself, you're listening to like the audio part of it, right? Your verbal message, if you will. This is your visual message, but it's very important for you because again, how you look is how you sound. Do you look uptight? Do you look like, if you couldn't hear your words, in fact, shut off the audio part so you're just focusing on the visual message. If you were playing this video for a bunch of people, or better yet, if you were somebody watching this and like it was somebody else displaying those qualities and characteristics, what would you think was going on? Would you think that this was somebody who is happy with their career choice? Would you think this is somebody who was enthusiastic? Would you think it's somebody was uptight and somebody who is angry instead of happy? Are you smiling in it? I mean, things like that, you have to understand that these things, whether you agree with me or not, most people believe that people can hear like a smile over the phone. I also believe that people can sense when you or I are uptight. And I also would believe and have believed for many years that people respond in kind. So if I sound very uptight and angry and defensive, I think that it's very easy for the other person at the other end of that phone to feel the same way. But if I'm confident, and if I'm fun and funny and conversational, I still think that you might have an asshole at the other end of that phone. That can happen. God knows in New York, I run into it all the time. But I think there's a lower probability of that. I do believe that people respond in kind, right? And, you know, just to kind of step away from it, again, you remember we talked about using analogies. Notice how I try to use them a lot in these podcasts to help you own a lesson. Right? You could be doing that with your potential clients. So let me step away from the phone for a minute. Have you ever gone to some kind of a place where, like, it could be a restaurant, for example, or it could be your dry cleaners, wherever it is. You go to some kind of place, and maybe you go up to a counter, and the person behind that counter is a real bitch, right? Even if it's a guy, right? It's like a guy's being a bitch, even. And just, like, really annoying or whatever. I mean, you're not going to sit there unless you're a really, like, special type of person, which I haven't met too many of them. And you're going to say, wow, this person's being an idiot to me. Let me be one back. In fact, oh, I got to tell you guys a story, just very quickly, because it's my podcast, and I can do stuff like that. Do you know, I got together with my brother the other day. And we went out to breakfast, man. We used to do this all the time. And you know, I guess, you know, life is short and we kind of forget to do this stuff. And I'm really glad my brother reached out to me, and I'm embarrassed that I wasn't the one reaching out to him, but got together with my big brother. We go out to breakfast, and I've been going to this one place now for like 15 years. And this waitress was just really bitchy from the moment we got in there. Like, it was just like really odd. Like, I said, okay, so we're gonna have both of us are gonna get the hungry man, right? And I'm laughing because it's like, you know, like, why wouldn't I get the hungry man? I mean, you know, my fat ass is not gonna get, like, I will have the fruit, please, and, you know, a poached egg. It doesn't look good on my plate. I am getting the hungry man. And so I said, we're gonna get the hungry man. And she interrupts me because, well, you didn't tell me which one. And again, my filter was on. And what I wanted to say was, why don't you let me finish, asshole, right? Like, immediately, my brother said, your whole demeanor changed when she said that, right? But I didn't say that to her. I said, well, you got to let us finish. So, like, I tell her what it is. So then my brother wants something. She cuts him off again, well, you, like a juice or whatever it is. And he goes, you got to let me finish or whatever. So she said something else, and it was like getting really stupid. So I looked at her, and I know now she is detecting that I'm not having this, that this is like really annoying. And you know, not many of you know me, like have met me personally, but most people have met me tell me that I have a horrible poker face, that like, if you're pissing me off, you could see it clearly. Like, you know, like the only way you could know even more, like if I like had a sign on my face that said, you are pissing me off right now. And I looked at her and I said, hey, listen, you know, why don't we start over? Except I don't think I said it as nice as I just said it now. I was like, yeah, I think we need to start over. And she says some kind of stupid remark. And then finally, she said something else. This is like, I don't know, like four or five times now. And I said, I have a need to ask you this question right now. I said, is there a problem? And like, I really like bottom line that shit very, very quickly. But here's the bottom line for you guys, is that really what it comes down to is that I responded in kind. I'm not saying I was right or I was wrong. I wasn't demeaning to her. I didn't yell at her or anything else. I just like, at that point, I got to know. Like, I mean, like, was I in here one time and I thought I tipped you right? And like you're confusing me with some other fat, bald idiot? Like, what's the deal, right? And, but people respond in kind. So that's why you have to be aware of that. So your visual message is very, very important. And when you're not listening to the audio message and you're focusing in on your visual, you know, that's something that could really be quite revealing to you. Final story that I want to tell you about the visual message. I do a lot of public speaking coaching. And I remember many years ago, I was coaching this future president of one of our companies on public speaking. And we did the videotape. And we first went and I said, I don't want you to look at the tape. I just want you to listen to your message. His verbal message, man, was awesome. It was spot on. The imagery he was using with his words were brilliant. They were great. He was confident, well-spoken, articulate. I mean, everything that you would ask for. And then I said to him, okay, great. I flipped around the monitor. And I turned off the audio and I said, I want you to watch and tell me if you didn't know what was being said, what do you think is going on? And you look at the video and he was not aware of it, but he looked like he was angry. And I said, what does that look like to you? Like he's pointing his finger, almost like, imagine like you were yelling at somebody and putting your finger into somebody's chest, like getting very like aggressive. That's what he looked like. Really like the movements and everything. What people didn't realize, like if they were listening to it, watching it at that point, was that actually he was quite passionate about the topic, but his visual message wasn't congruent with the actual verbal message. So he looked at it and he says, it looks like I'm chewing somebody's ass for doing something wrong. So that could be happening with you. In other words, you don't even realize it. So now tip number three is going to be really easy now that I beat the hell out of tip number one and tip number two. Tip number three is, you've heard this one a million times. Don't you dare say I know this or duh or like, why is he giving me this sales 101 thing? Keep a mirror on your desk. Because keeping a mirror on your desk is going to give you an early warning signal of your visual message. Your visual message, in turn, is an early warning signal of your verbal message. So if you're looking at yourself and you don't look happy, I have a feeling that the people at the other end of that home, the other end of the phone, they're picking up on that vibe. We also know that people can hear a smile over the phone. So a really good thing to do is to kind of have the word smile and maybe a happy face. I mean, I'm very big on visual cues. So maybe what you could do is you can go on the internet and find just like a ridiculous picture of somebody smiling, like just something that's going to make you laugh your ass off and make you happy. Heck, you could even maybe, you know, those of you who are parents out there, pictures of your kids or whatever. I prefer to have pictures of my kids when they were younger before they pissed me off and before I was writing the college tuition checks that I write today, because I see them today and I'm like, how dare you? I am like, how dare you? But no, seriously. I mean, something that just makes you happy, and the word smile to remind you to do that. But the mirror is your early warning signal. So here's what we have so far. The concept, and we're going to have a few more. We have the concept of game tape, where you're going to record and listen for certain things. You have the concept of game videotape, where you're going to be looking at your verbal, your visual message, and just realizing how that might be impacting the other thing. Then you have the concept of using a mirror so that you have the early warning signal of how you might be coming across on the phone. the next thing. And I talked about this last week on the podcast, so we don't have to spend a lot of time, but you should call your voicemail twice a day. Once at the beginning of the day, preferably, hey, look, if you commute to work, that's a great use of your time. You could just call your voicemail from the car. If not, you work from the home like me, just do it at the beginning of the day. You're going to do it at the end of the day also. And what you're going to do is you're not going to take more than 30 seconds to do this exercise. You're going to leave yourself a voicemail message. And the voicemail message could be anything from your opening statement to some talking points. Maybe there's some evidence that we've talked about that you want to talk through, like facts and studies and maybe those analogies that we talked about. You could break it down and just, okay, today I've got 30 seconds. I'm going to do an analogy. Like an analogy that I would use if I was on the phone with a potential client, that kind of thing. And you go and you leave that message for yourself. You could even do an actual voice message that you might leave for someone. You could leave something very specific to a certain person that you're going to be calling, that you know it's the ABC company. And in my case, I serve all types of industries, but I do a lot of work in the printing industry. So maybe what I'm going to do is, okay, I'm calling this vice president of sales. It's someone in the printing industry. So I need to tailor that message to them. Maybe something that I've learned in my research about that company. And I'm going to use that particular opening statement where I say, hey, I noticed that. And I'm going to tailor it for them so I get used to talking it through for them. So take 30 seconds or less and you're going to do that. Then what you're going to do when you get to the office is you're going to take another minute and you're going to review what you've done. Take about a minute. You can take longer, but take about a minute and just review what you've done, almost like game tape. How did I sound? How was the message? How was the packaging? Did I use things in there as far as evidence? That kind of thing. And you're going to do that again at the end of the day for a minute. So if you really add it up, you've got 2 minutes in review and 1 minute in actually leaving a message for yourself. So in 3 minutes a day, you've gotten a lot of practice in. But see, it adds up. And this is how you develop your chops. Because if you're doing this twice a day, it's 10 of these practice sessions a week. And by the way, 10 of them that you kind of did it in your sleep because it's 3 minutes. Are you going to really feel 3 minutes? Think about that. 3 minutes. I mean, you've wasted more than that on fantasy football leagues, right? I mean, be honest. I know what you're doing. So, and I got to research that client. Meanwhile, fantasy football league. But, you know, think about it. It's 10 a week. It's 40 a month. It's 480 a year and 480 more practice sessions than you're doing right now. And you will not feel this because, like I said, it'll be like in your sleep. You could do this because it's just like 3 minutes a day total. So that's number four, call your voicemail. So far we got the concept of game tape. We have the concept of game videotape. We have the concept of using a mirror, early warning sign, how we look is how we sound. Call your voicemail twice a day. It adds up to, you know, 10 a week, 40 a month, 480 a year. Brings us to the last one, and it's have a sparring session with someone once a week for 15 minutes. Let me say it again, and I'll do some splaining, as my friend Ricky Ricardo would say. What you want to do is have a sparring session at least once a week, 15 minutes each sparring session. So what you're going to do with a sparring session, like let's kind of define that. You're going to, maybe it's going to be a coworker, maybe it's going to be a friend of yours that's also in sales or whatever, and you guys are going to agree that at least once a week that you're going to call each other and do it kind of in an off time before you hit the phones and everything, before the day begins. Like, I mean, I have some of my clients now, they have sparring partners. They're calling them 7:45 in the morning before the game really starts to begin for them. And you call them up and you pretend like this is a live call and you role play and you use the actual opening statement that you would. The other person at the other end of that phone, their job is to be brutal with you. I mean, seriously, be brutal with you and there to throw objections at you and to pepper your ass with objections. Your job is to have at least 3 responses for every objection. So if they tell you, hey, I'd love to meet with you, but I'm just crazy busy right now. Bang, you got to give them 3 rebuttals to I'm too busy. And hopefully what they're going to do is they're going to say to you, well, you know what, to be honest with you, that was kind of like my throwaway objection. The bottom line is I guess I'm really not interested. Okay. Now you got to give them three rebuttals to "I'm not interested." And what you're going to find is that when you train that way, which is tougher than reality, it's going to like radically improve your phone chops. But there's another thing that I want you to do that I didn't mention next week, because you see, it's like a relationship, man. It's like we're dating, man. I got to like keep it new and exciting, right, in this courtship. So I held off on something, mostly because I forgot, to be quite honest with you. I forgot. Sue me, right? You want your money back? All right, you can't. It's a free podcast, right? What the hell? So what I did mention is that what you should do with those sparring sessions is you should tape them. And the easiest way for you to tape them is use a conference call service that has a taping option. Like I've used like UberCall, freeconferencecall.com is another thing that you can use. They're all free. And you can tape it, and then at the end, you have an MP3 of that sparring session, and then treat it like game tape. Go back and review it. Treat it like those messages that you're leaving for yourself, and evaluate your performance. And it's a great way to evaluate your performance, because now it's a different angle. It's not just one-sided. You're hearing what somebody said, how you responded, and you're getting the whole context of the call and the context of the objection and things like that. So that's another thing that you can do. But here's something else that I want you to do. And we're going to kind of call this a part of the sparring sessions and everything else. What you should really do in preparation for a sparring session is think about your top objections. Start with your top three objections. And for every objection that you typically get hit with, I don't mean the objections, by the way, that like once you've met with somebody, like your price is too high and things like that. I mean phone objections, like no time to meet right now. We're under contract. We're all set. I'm not interested. I'm talking about also stalls. A stall is different than an objection, because they're not telling you no. They're just kind of blowing it off. Like a typical stall is, well, you know, send me your information, and if I'm interested, I'll call you. See, that's a stall. They didn't tell you no. They're just like kind of like giving you some kind of task to do to kind of like blow off having to do anything right now and having to tell you no. So what you want to do is come up with those. And you want to come up with like your top three that you typically face. And then for each one of those, come up with three different rebuttals. And once you come up with the three different ones, you can practice even further on your own. And you can tape yourself talking through them. I'm not big on scripts, just so you guys know. I don't like them, people say all the time. But actors and actresses use them, and you'd never know it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why they're called, wait for it, actors, and what was the other one? Oh, actresses. They do that shit for a living. I don't. I sell stuff for a living. So no, I don't act, and I'm not good at it, and I believe that people are going to see right through it. What I'd rather do is talk through something and create kind of like a basic way that I would handle it, and then maybe put bullets and just like put like some of the key points that I want to touch on. I can even have that printed out and kept on the wall by the phone. So this way I get thrown up, oh, not interested. Boom, I've got these three talking points. And it cues my memory. And that's what I do right there. But that's what you can do as well. Come up with three different responses to your typical objections, your typical stalls. And heck, if you want to take it a step further, you could and this is really putting you guys to work, you could take the concept of your opening statement, because the opening statement, we said, could definitely change the trajectory of that call from one that's cooperative and friendly and productive to one where it's like you're fighting the whole time and you're defending yourself the whole time. So like we said, the best way with objections is objection avoidance. So it really does go back to that opening statement. So my suggestion to you is to train tougher than reality. And if we're all going to agree that we need to train tougher than the actual situation would warrant, then what we need to do is we need to come up with three different opening statements. And that could be like your tone. You could come up with something that would be more fun and funny and lighthearted. Maybe another approach is that you're going to be like kind of just the facts, and you're going to use more facts and figures and evidence, if you will. There's all different ways that you can go about it. But You got to challenge yourself. So there you have it, folks. You have five different ways to improve your phone chops. We talked about game tape, videotape, using a mirror. Call your voicemail twice a day. We talked about having these sparring sessions. We even talked about some kind of little bonus tips in there, like this idea of coming up with three responses for each and every objection that you're faced, or even having three different opening statements. There you have it, folks. All meaningless, by the way. All useless. This was a complete waste of your time this week until you choose to do something with it. Because otherwise, I just entertain you. I was just like kind of, you know, the guy that was in the car with you instead of sports radio. And that's really not going to help you at all, right? You don't need the rah-rah. What you need to do is get a sustained, awesome feeling that only can be attained from actually taking the action that we talked about today. I think this will keep you out of trouble for a little while. Something for you to definitely check out. And you know what? While we're at it, I just want to let you know that we're actually right up on the deadline for something. This week, May 4th, we're going to be hosting our Prospect Like a Pro program. And what I've done is I've broken this up into two sessions. And what's really cool about it is that this was by far my most popular selling online course that I had. But the problem with it, the challenge for a lot of people, is that they didn't have the time commitment because we used to do it in six sessions. Even financially, it was tough for a lot of people. So what I've done is I've reduced the amount of time, I've reduced the price that people had to pay back then, and I've condensed it down into a more affordable type of course, but one where you could do it in only two sessions. Let me tell you what you're going to gain by joining us. First of all, we're going to be talking about 30 ways to find potential clients who have a higher probability of needing what you sell today. I talked about that today. I kind of touched on the concept of finding triggers, trigger events, compelling events, all different names for it. But that's one of the things we're going to be talking about. I'm going to be sharing over 30 different trigger events that will dramatically change your results. In fact, you know, they say that opportunities generated because of a trigger event have a 400% higher closing rate than just your ordinary opportunities. So to me, those are numbers I can live with. I don't know about you. Also, we're going to talk about how to research quickly and efficiently so it doesn't become your life's work. We're going to talk about 33 different ways to approach a potential client. In other words, we've got to have other things other than the phone that support the phone effort. So I'm going to help you create a system where you have over 33 different ways. Truth be told, my average client has well over 100 different ways. So I'm definitely going to give you the means. I'm going to teach you how to fish on that one where you too can go over 100 with that. We're going to talk about three ways to dramatically increase the probability of someone taking your call. Tell me that's not frustrating for you guys. Like people not picking up their damn phone, right? Like if you've ever wished, like I wish there was a way for me to get them to pick up their phone without being like a dick about it, this is it. We're going to talk about how to create a prospecting cadence that maximizes exposure but limits the probability of becoming, you ready, like a pain in the ass. And that's what's happening with a lot of you guys because the cadence is all kinds of screwed up. And I know because I'm on the receiving end of them. We're going to also talk about 15 email templates that get open, read, and responded to. And I'm going to give you the 15 templates as Word documents so that you can change it to your style and your personality. We're going to talk about how to craft an objection-resistant dialogue. You remember that? I've talked about that today, about that opening statement, but it's now taking the opening statement, going a step further. How can we create a dialogue that's productive and not leaving you vulnerable to objections and stalls? And I actually have a template that I'm going to send you for that as well. We're going to talk about 12 ways to prevent skepticism, doubt, and resistance. I also have a three-step formula that you can use for responding to about 95% of the objections that you're going to be getting, right? So we can talk about that as well. We're going to talk about three really cool tactics to use when somebody says, send me some information. And if I'm interested, I'll give you a call. All right. You know, don't call us, we'll call you. And also four different types of voicemails that capture the recipient's attention. And guess what? Ready? You want to guess it? I'm going to send you the templates for that as well. So it's like 20 different templates two sessions, over 75 tips that we're going to be offering to learn more. But what I'm going to tell you before I tell you like how to learn more, you got to do it fast, because some of you, you wait to the last minute. You're like me. You procrastinate. And it's never really a good time to learn when you think about it. There's always shit going on. I mean, like, do you think you're really going to wake up, today is a glorious day to train. I shall train, because that is what, you know, that is what is being said to me today. I shall train. It never happens. There's always no shortage of stuff that you could be doing other than training. But what you really have to do is you got to get decisive. You got to take action. And I'm telling you, you really need to do it now, because registration is very close to ending on it. We're going to be doing it this week on May 4th. So registration will be closing very, very soon. And then I get to go into my snooty bouncer routine, like with the velvet rope, private party dude. Like, and you don't want me doing that with you. So what I want you to do is visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourprospecting. yoursalesplaybook.com/rockyourprospecting. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.